Radio Prague News.
The Ministry of Foreign Affairs has condemned cyber attacks by foreign state powers. The Transport Ministry wants to push ahead with road construction projects next year, and the Czech Republic will close down its embassy in Libya as of September 1st. The Ministry of Foreign Affairs has condemned the cyber attacks against state and non-state institutions by foreign state powers. Cybersecurity is key to the functioning of a sovereign state and its institutions, the ministry said on its website, stressing that no effort should be spared in fighting the growing hybrid threat. It said it was cooperating with allied states within the European Union and NATO to further common security. According to the National Office for Cyber and Information Security, a foreign state power was behind the June cyber attack on the Czech Foreign Ministry. It was not the first incident of its kind. Last December, the Czech Counterintelligence Service, BIS, said in its annual report that Russia's intelligence services were behind cyber attacks targeting the Foreign Ministry in 2017. The state will spend 87 billion crowns on road construction projects next year, 5 billion crowns more than originally planned, Transport Minister Vladimir Kremlík said at a press briefing in Prague on Friday. He said he would not request further money from the state budget, but would seek other sources and economise elsewhere. The ministry wants to start construction of the remaining sections of the motorway network within the next 5 years. 191 kilometres of new motorways are currently under construction. Finance Minister Alena Šilerová has agreed to increase the budget of the State Fund for Transport Infrastructure by 5 billion crowns. The fund will thus manage 70 billion crowns from the state budget and another 17 billion from European funds. 28 Czech soldiers who served in foreign missions in Kosovo, Italy and Afghanistan received medals of merit from the Army's Deputy Chief of Staff, Lieutenant General Jaromír Zuna, on Friday. Zuna thanked them for their dedicated service and for helping to fulfil the country's commitments in NATO and the European Union. The Czech participation in foreign missions is appreciated and highly valued, Lieutenant General Zuna said. The Czech Army has had soldiers stationed in Kosovo since 1999. Until 2011, it had a contingent of 500 soldiers there. Three of the decorated soldiers served in the naval operation Sofia, and 14 of them were deployed in Afghanistan. The Czech Republic will close down its embassy in Libya as of September 1st, the Czech Foreign Ministry said in a report which is to be debated by the government. Due to the security situation in Libya, the embassy has been operating from Tunis since April of 2015. Given that the Foreign Ministry sees no immediate prospect of improvement, the embassy will be closed down. Its agenda will be taken over by the Czech embassy in Tunisia, which is to be reinforced to meet those obligations. The organisers of the Hip Hop Kemp Festival, which starts in Hradec Králové on Friday, claim that police repressions are bringing down the number of visitors every year. The festival had around 25,000 visitors in 2015, and attendance has been sliding with every passing year. The organisers say they expect another significant drop to around 11,000 visitors this year. They claim that excessive police controls directed at drug abuse are putting people off from coming to what was once a highly popular event. The police have rejected the accusation, saying they're merely doing their duty as at any other festival in the country. And finally, a quick look at the weather forecast. Saturday should be partly cloudy to overcast with day temperatures between 23 and 27 degrees Celsius. I'm Daniela Ozerová, and that's the end of the news.
Hi there, this is Radio Prague and I'm Ian Willoughby. Today, 600 years after his death, a new exhibition in Prague looks back at Wenceslas IV, who was king of both Bohemia and the Romans. A week-long festival of music dedicated to Gustav Mahler and later Jewish composers interned at the Terezín ghetto by the Nazis. And later we have a special interview with Prague Mayor Zdeněk Hřib, who discusses the thorny issue of relations with China and a whole lot more. All that's coming up in today's programme. This Friday marks the 600-year anniversary since the death of King Wenceslas IV, who was simultaneously the King of Bohemia and of the Romans. His rule was marked by political miscalculation and excessive drinking. However, he was also an important patron of the arts. On the occasion of the anniversary, Prague Castle has opened an exhibition depicting some of the most accomplished Gothic craftsmanship produced during his era. Tom McEncroe has more.
The rule of Charles IV, who was simultaneously King of Bohemia and Holy Roman Emperor, is often seen by Czechs as the golden age of their medieval kingdom. That of his son Wenceslas IV, less so. Charles set his son up well. At the time that the 17-year-old Wenceslas assumed the throne, Bohemia was arguably the most powerful state in the Holy Roman Empire, and Charles had used his political power to ensure that he was elected for the most esteemed title in the medieval Catholic Europe, that of ruler of the Holy Roman Empire. Wenceslas was elected King of the Romans, but was never crowned as emperor, in part because his rule was characterized by a major papal schism. Aside from the split papacy, his rule was also marked by many other challenges. Towards the end of his reign, a new religious movement started sweeping across the country. The religious tension, in which Wenceslas played a role, would eventually culminate in the Hussite Wars. Wenceslas is still generally perceived by historians as a weak ruler. Robert Novotný from the Centre for Medieval Studies says that the king lacked a crucial skill which his other relatives possessed.
The reasons why Wenceslas failed as a ruler are many. However, I believe one stands out. He simply wasn't a gifted politician, unlike his father or his brother Sigismund. Charles and Sigismund saw politics as a passion and managed to recover quickly from political defeats. For Wenceslas, on the other hand, such defeats were heavy blows, and he soon started to avoid his kingly responsibilities.
Despite being an administrative and diplomatic failure, there was one area of activity for which Wenceslas is generally praised, his patronage of the arts, particularly in the form of illuminated manuscripts, which he is reported to have loved, says Robert Novotný.
There was a large contribution during his reign. We cannot say for certain whether this was mainly a consequence of a general European trend or through Wenceslas and his court. However, he was a very well-educated and cultivated individual.
An exhibition at the Imperial Stables of Prague Castle, which opened on Friday, is paying tribute to that legacy. Titled Wenceslas IV, King of Bohemia and of the Romans, The Beautiful Style Around 1400, it documents the life of the king and his court through the art of his contemporary Gothic style. Aside from a wide range of manuscripts, reliquaries and other small art, the exhibit also features artistic objects borrowed from leading international art centres. For example, the Humboldt University's mace, the drinking horn from Dresden, or a unique saddle from the Metropolitan Museum in New York. The exhibition is open to visitors until November 3rd.
That report was by Tom McEncroe. A unique festival dedicated to Gustav Mahler and later Jewish composers interned by Nazi Germany in a North Bohemian ghetto gets underway on Sunday. Organised by the Eternal Hope Foundation and the Terezin Composers Institute, the aim is to celebrate the work of brilliant composers whose lives were cut tragically short. Brian Kennedy reports.
Forcing tens of thousands of European Jews into the notorious Terezin ghetto and show camp north of Prague, the Nazis inadvertently brought together some of the continent's most gifted musicians. To convince the International Red Cross that the Jewish captives were being treated well, the Third Reich allowed them to enjoy a cultural life of sorts, albeit under the most inhospitable conditions. Miraculously, much of the work written or composed in the Terezin ghetto has survived, but it remains unappreciated. So says musicologist Lubomir Spirny. He heads the Terezin Composers Institute and notes that the festival program is both intentionally and inherently eclectic.
jako mozaiku různých aktivit, různých žánrů.
It's something of a mosaic of different genres and styles. Even the composers who were interned in Terezín had no common artistic starting point, no common style. This was reflected in the cultural life in Terezín.
V kulturním životě Terezína.
The week-long festival, Eternal Hope, Gustav Mahler and Terezín Composers, showcases pieces by Viktor Ullmann, Gideon Klein, Hans Krása and Pavel Haas, all of whom were born in what is today the Czech Republic, and all of whom died in Nazi extermination camps. Among the groups performing the works of Terezín composers this week in Prague and in the garrison town are the string trio Virtuoso Brunesnes, pianist Ivo Kahanek, the Bennett Quartet, and the ensemble Martino Voices. Apart from classical music, cabaret is also on the program. Why cabaret? Lubomír Spurný again.
Kabaret proto, protože členem našeho realizačního týmu.
On our team is former National Theatre in Brno artistic director and celebrated ballet choreographer Zdeněk Prokeš. His parents were interned in Terezín and his father wrote a play here. I'm curious how it will be received. Cabaret is a genre reacting to contemporary events.
Reaguje na konkrétní situaci, tak uvidíme, co nám letos kabaret přinese.
And why Gustav Mahler? The composer, a Bohemian Jew who flourished in fin de siècle Vienna, embodies the pre-war ethos of a shared creative community of ethnic Czech, German, and Jewish artists. But the Terezín Composers Institute is not just looking to preserve the musical culture of the Jewish ghetto and concentration camp, says Lubomír Spurný.
Pro Terezín, který je dneska městem většinou lidí sociálně vyloučený.
Today, mainly socially disadvantaged people live in Terezín. We want to set up a music school for children there, with teachers offering lessons in piano, flute, guitar and choir singing. We want to finance these teachers and have already bought instruments. So we're trying to keep the music alive here.
Koupili jsme kytaru, kupujeme flétny, takže snažíme se, aby hudba v Terezíně žila dál.
Within 2 years, he says, the sponsors would like to see those students perform Brundibár, an opera written in Terezín by Hans Krása and staged 55 times by the children also imprisoned there.
That report was by Brian Kennedy. Now, Zdeněk Hřib of the Pirate Party has been the mayor of Prague for only 10 months, but he's already received the attention of international media, particularly over his efforts to remove an article recognizing the One China policy from the city's partnership agreement with Beijing. Tom McEncrow met with Mr. Hřib at City Hall to discuss his view of the situation, as well as his fondness for Taiwan. The mayor is actually a physician by training, and Tom began by asking him for a diagnosis of tourism in Prague and the city's plans in that area.
Prague is a really nice city. If you haven't visited Prague yet, you definitely should visit us and enjoy the city full of historical architecture and culture. However, there are some problems regarding the tourism, which we are solving as we speak. One of the problems is the beer bikes, which is generally a very annoying thing for the residents in the city center. And we are trying to focus more on different types of tourists who are oriented more towards the culture and architecture, and not generally towards cheap beer in particular in the Czech pubs. So one of the things we are doing is focus on the congress industry, because Prague has got a very good history of the congress visits. I think we are doing a great job there, and there is a new hall and the congress center being built, which will also enhance the congress capabilities of Prague.
When it comes to things like tourist traps, stuff like exchange stations, Are you doing something to combat these, and how much can you actually do to combat these? Is it something which Prague can actually solve, a city can solve, or do you need an input, for example, from the government?
Well, the situation with the exchange offices have improved. It's still not as ideal as it could be, but there is a new law that you can cancel the transaction in 3 hours, and the exchange office should inform you about that. However, we know that some of the exchange offices are a little bit hesitant in this matter. The Czech National Bank is in charge of this law enforcement, so I believe that in the near future this will be solved definitely. We as Prague, what we can do directly is to cancel the rent of exchange offices that are directly in some of the city premises. So that's what we are trying to do to mitigate the problem. However, a lot of exchange offices are actually in the private properties, so our capabilities are limited.
Now, you're the city's mayor, but it's actually your clashes with China which have made you most visible abroad. These stem mainly from your reservations about the Prague-Beijing agreement, which was signed by the previous administration, and it contains a clause that states that Prague respects the One China policy. This has sort of put you in a strange role, because apart from being in charge of municipal administration, whether you like it or not, you've also become a sort of active variable in Czech-Chinese relations. How do you feel about that?
Although it can be seen in some media, we are not dealing with China here in Prague. We're dealing with our partnership city, Beijing, which, as a matter of fact, our predecessors signed a contract, the agreement, the partnership agreement, which includes the One China policy statement. And this, from my point of view, is a completely unnecessary part of the agreement, and actually it was a mistake of our predecessors to allow Prague to be involved in this thing, because the One China policy is definitely something that should be dealt on the level of the Ministry of Foreign Affairs, and it's also a very complicated matter. We in Prague, we have to deal with the insufficient investments into the transport infrastructure, the housing crisis. These are the things we have to deal with in Prague, whereas the One China policy is definitely something that we do not want to deal with. So we would like to leave this article number 3 out of the partnership city agreement, and to keep our partnerships with foreign cities apolitical and based on a mutually beneficial cultural exchange.
Now, I recently spoke to sinologist Philip Jerosz about what your future steps could be. Now, he says that you could either annul the agreement or simply ignore the fact that there is this clause. I was wondering, how do you see it? I mean, which one of those two routes are you thinking of taking? And is there perhaps another way you can get out of this?
Well, we are now in the middle of negotiation with the Beijing side. Our aim is to exclude the article number 3 out of the contract. Right now, we're waiting for the response of the Beijing side. We have sent them a letter. We have sent already some letters, and this is another one. So the negotiation is ongoing, and we're waiting for their response. And I think that we should have this closed until autumn. If it will be not possible to just exclude the article number 3, definitely one of the realistic scenarios is that we will cancel the contract as a whole.
Now, as mentioned already, this connects it to the One China policy. The other China is Taiwan, and it's a place you know quite well. While you were a student of medicine, you spent time in Taiwan on an exchange trip. I was wondering, what was that time like, and did you learn something there that impacts your decisions today as well?
Well, I've been in Taiwan for 2 months. It was a clerkship during my medical studies, so I have learned a lot of things regarding the radiology, the X-rays or the magnetic resonance and CT. But yes, I've also learned that definitely the Taiwanese people are probably the nation with the most hospitality in the region. Yes, but that is actually not involving this negotiation regarding the article number 3 in the sister cities agreement between Prague and Beijing, because it is not actually my decision that the article should be excluded. It is a decision of the whole city council, and this is caused by the fact that all the members of the coalition, so all the parties that make up the council, were criticizing this Article Number 3 at the time it has been signed.
Now, you met with President Tsai of Taiwan in March, and the president went on to say that Taiwan is your second home. Would you go as far as to say that?
Yes. I really felt like at home when I was there for the 2 months. And yes, we have met with the mayor of Taipei. We have met with the Ministry of Informatics. We have met also with President Tsai, because I believe that there is an opportunity for us to learn from the Taiwanese successes, definitely, specifically on the field of the IT and technology, and we could transfer some of the success to Prague.
You were also active in implementing IT technologies in healthcare before you entered as a mayor, and I just read what the Taiwanese president stated after your meeting, and she said that particularly when it came to Taiwanese healthcare, which you were particularly interested in. So I was just wondering, you know, when it comes to that, is there going to be some sort of agreement, or have you learned something there that you want to implement also in the Czech Republic?
Well, I visited also the medical school in Taiwan, and generally what is interesting that they are focused on the field of artificial intelligence. For example, in healthcare, we here in Prague, we are also focused on the field of the artificial intelligence. We have started the artificial intelligence super hub, the Prague AI, which should also facilitate the development of the AI applications, both for the city and also others. So the topic of artificial intelligence is one of the areas we are interested in. So yes, I see there is a potential of cooperation between Prague and Taipei in this field, and also in the field of other students' exchanges.
Since you've been placed in the international spotlight, I was wondering, how would you sort of define yourself as a politician in Western terminology? I mean, where are you coming from? Are you a liberal, a progressive, something else? What does it sort of mean to be a Czech pirate?
Sure. Well, I also consider myself a liberal politician. We do not put us somewhere on the left-right scale, so we are sort of in the middle from this point of view. And for me, one of my priorities is my promise of 1 million trees for Prague. Right now, we got already the action plan on a paper, so we know that we will make it. We have already planted 170,000 of trees, so we are sure that we are able to make half of the million in this election term, and the second half will be there for those who will win the next elections.
I know you want to you want me to ask you about the trees, and this question may not be completely connected to the trees, but actually kind of is. So you come from a family of architects, and your father was a project manager in the reconstruction of the Czech National Bank, if I'm correct. And during the last year's City Hall elections, there were various candidates sort of coming up with ideas of creating a new sort of monument in Prague. Do you have an ambition to build anything? Or is it also the trees? Is that sort of what will be your legacy? Or is there, you and your coalition partners, do you want to build some sort of unique building also which would be interesting for visitors?
Well, we have just started the construction of the new metro line, the metro line D. That is definitely a long-term project which will not be finished during this election term. However, we have also a plan for a new concert hall at the bank of the Vltava River. That is also something that will take some time. Besides that, there is a plan to build 2 new bridges across Vltava. But there is not a project that will be both started and finished during one election term. So yes, the trees will be probably the most prominent legacy. But I think it's really not a small legacy, because as I have said, the overheating of the city is definitely one of the biggest problems today.
In the beginning, you started by saying why people should visit Prague, and obvious reasons, understandably, but I was wondering, since you've become mayor, is there something you've discovered about Prague, something new, something you really didn't expect from before,
Well, I had some surprises in my office since I was elected. For example, one of the surprises was that the city of Prague owns two tanks which can be used immediately, and it is not to be used in the war, but it is to be used, for example, in case of emergency like floods, to for example move the ships along the bank. So the fact that the Prague owns two tanks was one of the surprises.
Czechs work longer than anyone in the EU to buy a flat. So in terms of affordability of housing, to what degree do you think, for example, Airbnb and vacant flats play a role? I was also meaning that question sort of in the character of preserving neighbourhoods. Like, is Prague 1 already lost to this sort of phenomenon? Or what are you doing to change that, apart from building houses on brownfields?
Well, we're approaching the problem of housing crisis from many aspects simultaneously. One of the things is that the brownfields need to be unblocked. That's the space for a new home for actually hundreds of new Prague citizens. So that's one thing. Second thing is that the permission processes are very slow in Prague, so we have to speed them up. The next thing is that the city of Prague owns some flats that should be used appropriately, and actually some of them it is not possible to use them because they are not reconstructed. So it's the reconstruction and effective management of the pool of the city-owned flats. And of course, there is also the problems related to the short-term accommodation like Airbnb. So in this field, there is a new law that allows us to raise the fee for the city, the tax from the accommodation, both in hotels and in Airbnb. So that is one thing, how to approach this, but there are other also issues connected to this, like an effective collection of the tax, which is about sharing the data between the city and Airbnb. And this, as this was left out of the law, should be done through a memorandum between the city of Prague and Airbnb, and this is being negotiated.
So is it possible to put some sort of date on where we can see changes, or is this something which is undateable, something will drag on?
Yes, well, there are also activities done by the part of the Prague, namely Prague 1, which is going to put emphasis on the enforcement of the current rules, which means basically the flats used for Airbnb, that means for making money out of the flat, has to be appropriately labeled. Also that it is necessary that there must be silence in night, so the residents could sleep in their flats without being disturbed by the tourists. These are activities of Prague 1. And the city as a whole supports this. We will see how we will be able to deal with the problem without a substantial law change.
And that was the mayor of Prague, Zdeněk Hřib of the Pirate Party, and he was speaking to Tom McEncrow. I'm afraid that's all we have time for in today's programme. Please send any comments you may have to english@radio.cz. And you will, of course, find us also on Twitter, on Facebook and on Instagram. But for now, from me, Ian Willoughby, and everybody here at Radio Prague, thanks very much indeed for listening, folks, and speak to you soon.